Hey guys, can you hear me back there? Awesome. We're going to go ahead and get started. Feel free to hang out back there and get a seat wherever you want. We only have 5.5 hours of tape, so we're going to be, you know, really pushing it today. I'm Andrew. I work with Microsoft. I'm a tech evangelist here. I work out of this space. Some of you might be your first time in here. I see a couple familiar faces. What this space is a nice little community space where we can host awesome events like this one. This is probably one of the coolest ones we've hosted so far. We're super excited to be here with NPM and kind of having this awesome talk. We've had Sarah come down all the way from Seattle and Ashley, who's in the back there from, I think, New York City. So bringing in speakers to talk about really cool stuff, NPM and how it works on Windows. And if you have any questions about the space or about anything with Microsoft, feel free to grab me afterwards. Otherwise, I'm just going to get out of the way and let Sarah go ahead and get started here.
All right. So I'm Sarah. I work on developer tools at Microsoft, which basically means that my job is literally, there's an echo in this room. My job is literally to help you all be more productive. And so in particular, I work on a lot of the node tooling. And so one of the things that is interesting about this is that working on dev tooling means that you see a very, very different side of technologies. I get to hear about everyone's problems. So I'm basically like a node therapist, right? Someone sits down on the couch, and they tell me about all of their problems with the event loop, and then I code up some dev tool to help them with that. After hearing all of these complaints, I start noticing a bunch of different patterns and a bunch of different really gotchas that impede people from really taking the most advantage of those technologies. So it's one thing to create a demo that gets people excited about something, but it's another, okay, this is the echo okay for you all?
I think it's okay.
Okay. All right, perfect. But it's another thing to actually, show off hit some of those walls that you're going to hit when you actually start getting deeper into a technology. So that's what we're going to try and do in this demo. And in particular, I wanted to focus on Windows for two reasons. The first is that we have a bunch of threads like this. This happened on Node.jp the other day. And it's 211 comments and counting. Hopefully we can close it soon. But it basically just turned into a rant because most of the people on that thread, they're Node developers, and this particularly has to do with native modules in Node, which means that you're adding a bunch of C++ to everything, and then everyone gets confused because you get a bunch of cryptic compiler errors and no one knows what's going on. And so this just kind of became a catch-all thread for everyone who is unhappy. And so that makes me sad, and I would really like you all to be happy. So that's the purpose of this talk. Now, I know that there's a bunch of different people at all levels in here, so we're going to start from Hello World, kind of move quickly through that, and then get to some of the meat of it. So Hello World in Node is super easy. Actually, before I even flip to the slide, to the editor, can anyone tell me what Hello World looks like in Node? Console log Hello World, keep things simple. So there is also Hello World in a web app, right? So, and we can go ahead and run it. I've already installed Node. So Node, app.js, super simple, right? So then there's these next things that you already mentioned, right? Because Hello World in Node is so easy that we can't just do basic Hello World. We have to do Hello World Server Edition. So this is Hello World Server Edition. And the first thing that you'll notice is this line over here. It says require HTTP. Basically, Node has a bunch of built-in modules. And this statement takes in that module because we want to use it later on. And so after that, we go ahead and we create a server object. And we also pass in a callback that's going to fire whenever a request is sent to the server. And so in particular, this code over here is going to execute. Then we want to set a port, right? Because we want to be able to hit this somehow. And we're going to listen on that port, and we're going to print out a line. So let's see how that works. Node server.js. And it's running on localhost, so go ahead and switch over here. And awesome, we have hello world. Now, did any? Yeah, awesome! one of the interesting things about this, though, does anyone know why I did this? There we go. We want to get it from environment variable. Why do we want to get it from environment variable? Exactly. If we just set it statically, which is actually what you see in a lot of the samples and documentation online, then when you go to deploy it and you run your site, it's not going to work because let's say you're running on Azure. Azure is opening up a port, and it's telling you what that port is using that port environment variable. And so you also use environment variables for things like API keys and things like that that you don't want to be checking into source and then have be visible to pretty much everyone. Okay, now switching back to the slides. I don't know, how many people read the description of the talk? Few people. So there were mention of bobbleheads there. And we don't just want one bobblehead. We want to scale this. We want so many bobbleheads. So we're going to create a bobblehead generator. And here's the architecture of that. So the first thing is we're going to upload a photo. Next, we're going to detect a face. And there are all sorts of face recognition, face detection algorithms, slightly different than recognition. And they're fairly simple. They kind of look for, this is totally tangential, but they look for kind of a dark spot at the eyes and then kind of this in-between in the node. So they kind of detect this part of your face. And then there are other ones that work in other ways. But that was one of the most basic ones. And after that, we're going to take that face that we detected. We're going to crop it, rotate it, and paste it on the original image. And we're going to do this in various permutations. Lastly, we're going to create a GIF, because GIFs are fun. And that's how you create a bobblehead. So the first thing that we're going to go into is actually uploading the photo. Now, we started off with that basic Hello World app, right? But it was actually, and Node is great because you can actually do a lot in so few lines of code. However, one of Node's key philosophies is kind of keeping things as small as possible, as small and as modular. So Node Core is not restrictive, but it's small. And if you actually want to be able to create some far more impressive apps, then you usually want something a little bit more. And luckily, NPM has this. Everyone here knows about NPM or not? All right, few people. Or everyone was like, that's too obvious of a question. I'm not going to bother justifying it with a hand raise. And so NPM is the package manager for JavaScript. And it's Node's package manager, even though it doesn't actually stand for Node's package manager. See, right over here, it stands for nonlinear programming methods. And it actually changes every time you refresh the page. And so in NPM, there are 200,000 and counting modules and packages available for you to actually take advantage of. Now, that's a whole lot bigger than the, I think it's 40 modules or so that are in Node's built-in framework. So in order to actually create this upload piece of it, we're going to be using a module called Express. And in order to get Express, we're going to be using NPM CLI tool, properly named NPM. Surprise. And NPM actually ships with Node. So it ships bundled with Node, and you can go ahead and get the latest versions of NPM as well. That won't really conflict with any of the things you're doing with Node. So in this case, we're going to NPM install Express. And I think all the NPM folks are going to cringe soon. And we're going to head into the directory, and we'll see there's a node modules folder, right? So we'll switch into node modules. And actually, this is command lines aren't great for visualizing things. So we can go and we can look at Express, and we can keep digging down, and you can see that it's a tree, right? And it's a tree of all of its dependencies. And so one of the problems with such a tree is, well, actually not. So effectively, how it works is you'll have Express, and Express will have, let's say, you know, A and B as dependencies. So if Express has A and B as dependencies, then it's going to go Express, node modules, A, and then B is also going to be with node modules. And then it's going to keep recursing down through the dependencies. Now, this is really great because it means that you actually avoid a lot of the dependency hell that normally comes with any technologies. Because let's say if A depended on C at version 3 and B depended on C at version 2, those are conflicting versions, then you can actually have both of them stored with your app. However, you can imagine this tree gets kind of big with a lot of dependencies. And that can lead to things like MaxPath. So how many of you all have encountered MaxPath? Just a few. All right. So MaxPath is a limitation in Windows. So it's an operating system limitation, not a file system limitation. And basically, it caps the number of characters in a file path to 260 characters. And the problem with this is that now when you have NPM and it's installing this large dependency tree, you eventually fall off this cliff of doom. And there isn't too much you can do about it because Windows Explorer, the Windows APIs don't support paths longer than 260 characters. So then when you run into it, then you can't actually delete the file without this other workaround. And so it can cause a whole lot of pain, and also the .NET file APIs kind of don't really work so well with this. So rest assured, there are a bunch of workarounds, right? So the first thing is, I don't know if you noticed, but when I was over here, I'm starting in a pretty short path. And that was intentional. That was to just generally avoid any max path issues. Now, if you already started in a longer path, or if you already exceeded max path and you're running into this issue where you can't actually delete the folder in order to move it to a shorter path, then there's this awesome tool called RimRaf, which basically uses the same workaround that Node and NPM use in order to go ahead and delete the files. So Node and NPM create this path, right? It's not, again, it's not a file system limitation. It's a Windows API and .NET API limitation. The other thing you can do is dedupe, right? So when we're back over here, right, and we had version C and version C, let's say that the versions were actually not conflicting, right? So they both depended on a version of C that wasn't conflicting. You could conceivably bring C up to this top path. Now, for a while, NPM didn't actually do this automatically for you. So you would use something called dedupe that would take C and bring it up to the top. Now, you might be wondering, wait a second, how's node module resolution actually working now? Because I thought it recurses down and looks at the children, and that's where it actually finds its dependencies. Well, if it can't find anything in its child folder, node modules folder, then it'll actually start making its way back up, right? So it'll to its parent node module folder. So in this case, if A was looking for C, but C wasn't actually in that path, then it would recurse up to the top level, look for C, and then if it finds C, then it's going to resolve to that. So that's dedupe. So just deduplicating your packages, right? It's going to save on space and all that jazz. Flatten packages is a CLI utility that someone created to just bring everything to the top level. So even if it's not duplicated, it would do that. Now, the problem with this is that it can cause dependency hell because you just brought two conflicting versions up to a top level. But the best thing that just happened is NPM v3. And it's not shipping with Node v4 yet, which is the latest LTS release of Node. But it is shipping with Node v5, which you can download on Node's page. So that's one way to get NPM v3. And the other way is to get NPM Windows is to upgrade NPM separately. Now, what's so special about NPM v3? Well, everything is maximally flat by default. So that means it's sort of a combination of flattened packages and dedupe. So the only time where you're going to actually see that nesting is whenever there's a version conflict. So that actually has gotten rid of most of the max path issues. That combined with, basically, I use a combination of this, of these two, and am pretty set. So it's not impossible to hit max path still. And that's where this kind of future stuff comes in, which is some stuff that we at Microsoft are doing to help resolve these issues. So .NET file APIs, that's actually something we're committed to fixing. And so you can actually see some of the pull requests that have gone through to help address that issue in .NET. That'll mean that a lot of the tools that are, you know, like editors and stuff like that will start working much better with when max path is reached. The other thing is, it's not really official. We're kind of chatting with the team, and then maybe, probably. Here's the thing. We've tried to fix MaxPath like so many times in the past. You can see these blog posts where we committed to, oh man, we're totally going to do it, and this is how it's going to be done, and these are the complications, and it didn't happen. So now I'm hesitant to actually say like anything further. So with .NET, I've already seen pull requests go in, so I'm like, all right, sweet, someone's on that. Windows, it's like, well, like, We'll see. I'll wait until I see some code checked in. But there is some progress on that. So, awesome! And NPM v3 rocks. Okay, and actually, kind of to demo that. So after we installed Express, right, we can go ahead and I also have another Express app, right? So super basic. You know, using require in order to load the module, it resolves the same way, and then we can do Node Express app, run it, see it running, awesome, printed in a different font, so you know something changed, and that's it. And then, if you wanted to see, but that was using the nested module structure, right? So I'm going to actually delete Node modules there. Using the RimRaft tool. I didn't actually have to, but I just kind of wanted to demo it. And then we'll go ahead and I'm using something called NVM, which lets me switch between versions of Node really easily. And so this is useful for keeping up for all of the different versions of Node that keep coming out on a daily basis. So in this case, I'm going to say npm use 5.0 and click through some prompts, right? Now I can see that my NPM version is 3. And so then if I do NPM install Express, and we can go ahead and see how good this Wi-Fi is. Sweet. And now we have a whole lot more directories in there. So now, switching back, so after we go ahead and write some upload code, which is in a different project, right? So right here, I went ahead and I used Express. And I'm not going to go through all of the details of this app. I'm just going to point out different things. Express has these different pieces called middleware, which are basically things that you can plug in and then they operate on the request, something that's worth digging into a little bit more. And then it's going to have an upload button and everything like that. Then we're going to have some routes to be handled. So things like getting the bobblehead and displaying it and generating it and all that jazz. So the next piece is actually detecting the face. And for this, I'm using an API called Project Oxford. So you could also use a face detection algorithm library like OpenCV or something like that. But this one was pretty easy to use. They just had a bunch of CV APIs. And so you can go through, and one of them was face APIs, my bad. One of them was face verification and face detection. And the cool thing is actually, if you play around with this a little bit more, then you can actually, it'll try and tell the age of something. So in this case, too many windows, sorry about that. We want to go ahead to, or we generate the bobblehead. And actually it didn't work. So we'll go over here. Oh, my bad. It's in the routes folder. Okay. So right here, this is where we are actually generating the bobblehead. And the first thing we do is detect the face. And so that's the part we're actually going to dig through right now. And so that's going to be in bobble.js. And you know what? I'm just going to switch editors here. So I'm demoing both VS Code and Visual Studio at the same time. Hope that's not too confusing. But F12 works a whole lot better in VS at the moment. So we're going to go with that. And so detect face. And so right now, we're seeing that this is basically a simple call to the API. We grab the API over here and we require it, and that's all installed, right? And then we enter in the API key, and just as before, I'm using the environment variables. And in this case, it's less because it's going to set it for me. I'm gonna have to change this key after this, right? So it's gonna be in environment variables over here. And if I go to Oxford API, you see that key over there. Oops. Okay, so that's the part that is actually going to generate, detect the face. And let's go ahead and we will, bubble permutations, okay. So we're gonna go over here. We're gonna hit F5 and just run the app, and then we can see some of the responses that, oh my bad, hold on. I hit an issue that I was gonna show you a little bit too early. NVM use O.26. Okay. Oh wait. Okay, fine. It's going to be a spoiler alert, but that's okay. It'll make a whole lot more sense. And this is going to be. Oh, good. There's no sound. Because it's Neon Cat, and that was going to be really annoying if that started streaming. So we can go ahead and we can generate a photo. And so if anyone wants to send me a photo that they really enjoy as a bobblehead, then feel free. And so right now we're getting the response from the API. And we can go through and we can dig through and see kind of the face ID, the face rectangle, all of these values that we're getting. And then the other thing that's kind of cool about this API is that, and we'll open the immediate window. So we can execute some code. Actually, that didn't work very well. Watch window. So in the response, we also have attributes. And so you can even see it thinks that Isaac is 24, so, and male. And then we can go ahead and step through and see what it's doing. And then now the next part is actually going to be, so right now it's generating the bobblehead. And so we're going to step through over there. And step in. Okay, so here is where we start using a library called LWIP. Now, and this is going to do the cropping of the face once the actual dimensions are detected using that API. Now, the problem with LWIP is npmjs.org, LWIP, or package LWIP, my bad. Ah, nice. Nice resolution there. Okay. Is that it actually requires native. Okay. See this note over here about building on Windows with Visual Studio requires VS 2013 or higher? Yeah, that was what that thread was about, where everyone was really upset. Because while some packages are purely Node, and that's all great, some of them also involve C++, and then you can run into various configuration issues when it comes to that, because C++ isn't the easiest to configure. Now, a lot of the errors are really cryptic, and so I'm just going to give you a few tips to kind of deal with that, and actually just some how to set up your machine, because a lot of people have a lot of trouble with that. So the first thing is NAN, NodeJip, Node Prejip. Anytime you hear any of those words, that's a native module. So just kind of giving you a spidey sense for all of this. The next thing is any of the so in order to actually install any of the native modules, you'll need Python, you'll need a C++ compiler, and I didn't finish. I guess you should make sure everything's okay, but there's supposed to have some more stuff after that. And so the C++ compiler you can get in two forms. The first is Visual Studio, and that takes some time to install. So if you want to use Visual Studio, then go at it, right? I build tools for VS. But if you want to use, you know, keep your environment a little bit more lightweight or have something spin up a bit more quickly, then using, we just released a standalone C++ build tools that will install the prerequisites for you, and it's a whole lot easier to do. So that's why we're probably going to close that thread on NodeJip soon, is because now Windows devs are slightly happier with this arrangement. But that's not going to fix everything, because, and this isn't now we're getting out of the Windows issues. The Windows issue is mainly getting the compiler in place. There are all sorts of random compiler errors that you can get, and they can be really confusing if you don't know C++. So I tried to translate them into human form. So the first is make sure that Python's installed. Next, if it says something about not being able to find MS Build or VS or VC compiler, that means your configuration is wrong. And so that is the issue. NAN, Node, V8, IOJS, that class tends to be basically try a different Node version, try the latest Node, try the latest version of the package, because those are API changes that changed within Node itself. And there was some period of time where Node went through these rapid breaking changes with that. So if you're using an old version of a package, or if it's defined somewhere in dependencies, then that could be an issue. Various syntax errors, missing commands. So syntax errors, missing commands, or header files. Some of the missing commands you can actually get past by using Cygwin, because the library authors assume that you're on Unix, and so then they try and run a Unix command, and then it doesn't exist. So you can get past some of those, but generally, the bottom three, you can just file an issue on the package author if it doesn't really work out. The top two are configuration issues with your machine, so things that you should spend more time fixing. So with that, I'm going to run through the rest of the app, and we'll go ahead and F5 through. And kind of disappointed there's no music now. But just hum the Neon Cat song. It's pretty awesome. And yeah, so there we go. So we generated a bobblehead. And you can go try it. because I already deployed it as well. So bobblehead.azurewebsites.net. Oh, awesome. Someone's playing it. Appreciate it. yeah, and that's my manager. So let's see. It kind of just picked a static bobblehead, and that happened to be it. So all right. So after you know you've built your app and everything's working, you've gotten past the MaxPath issues or any compiler issues. Those are the top two issues that people run into. So if you know you have a handle on those, if you have that table, like you are way ahead of anyone in that thread at this point. So I'm actually going to post this over there because it is really confusing when you just have this spew of errors spit out and you have no idea what the issue is. So then the next thing is just kind of deploying your app. And there are a few different things I want to walk through. So if you're deploying on Windows, you should use something called IIS Node. And there's some more information about that online. Not everyone deploys to Windows if they're developing on Windows. Actually, most people don't. I think we did a survey and it was something like 80% are deploying to Linux even if they're devving on Windows. And so deploying to Linux is totally okay. Do you deploy Node modules or not? Generally, no, unless you're running into some native compilation. Unless, for some reason, you can't get the production environment to install the prerequisites that you need in order to run on, in order to build the app. So if it doesn't have a C++ compiler, if it doesn't have any other prerequisites, like some packages require that you install something else first, then you can deploy a pre-compiled version of that package. That's pretty much the only workaround you have there. And then you have to make sure that the node versions match and all that stuff. So it's not that fun. And then set environment variables, because that means you can keep all your API keys away from hackers. And you can not actually have your app work. You can actually have your app work if it's the host that's setting it. And check out Docker and Vagrant, because those get really abstract away your development and production OSs for you, right? So you can always attach a debugger to a Docker, a Docker container or a Vagrant container or some VM or something like that. Then the next thing is how does anyone have a sense of time here? How much time do we have left? How long have we been going for? Okay, cool. So editing, debugging, and more. So I'll go through this super quickly just to kind of show you a couple of the tools that we're working on at Microsoft. There are also some other editors out there. There's Vim, there's Sublime, there's WebStorm, and they all have their own set of features, right? So it's really just a matter of preference. We have two different offerings. So we have VS Code, and VS Code is far more lightweight, right? Like than VS. It takes just a couple seconds to start up. It has a basic debugger there. So if I were to run this app, let me stop running this one. Both of them, F5 goes ahead and runs it, and I can go into server. Actually, wait a second. No, that's not where I wanted to go. Cool. So it wasn't configured properly, and the way to configure it is by telling it which file to run, which I'll go ahead and add here. So I need to run app.js rather than bin www. And neon cats are going crazy. And we're going to set a breakpoint. Let's go into the files. Bobble.js. Actually, routes. And we'll set one at index. All right, so go ahead, reload the page, and that was supposed to work. All right, didn't work. Happens. I'm not sure what happened. I very well could, yeah, all right. Demo failure, but you saw the breakpoints working in VS. They work pretty much the same way. And then the other piece is IntelliSense, right? So when you're using all these different packages, it's kind of hard to get a hold of. In VS Code, right, if we wanted to get IntelliSense, right now we're not getting IntelliSense for, right now, okay, we are. That's unfortunate. I was trying to demo not getting IntelliSense. If I didn't have this node DTS file, then I would not have IntelliSense. And so these are basically TypeScript definition files that give you a little bit of information about the libraries, right? And this is actually something that's supported by the community, so it'll tell you what the API looks like. And so you can see right here where it kind of defines things in a TypeScript-y way, and then we use that to actually power the IntelliSense in VS Code. So if you want to get IntelliSense on a module, you can use something called TSD, and you can do TSD install, so it's kind of like NPM install, and then enter in your module name, like Express, it'll go ahead and it'll download it. And the issue is that there are only like 1,300 packages indefinitely typed, right? So this is actually the repository here. It's this big directory of files. That's effectively where all of these are getting pulled from. So you can go and you can create your own, and you can contribute those. But what's nice is that then you're getting some syntactically correct completions in a dynamically typed language, which is pretty neat. And in VS, we also have IntelliSense, and in this case, the reason that F12 was working a little bit better here was because we statically analyze all your files, so it's much more heavyweight because there's this upfront cost to it, but it means that you're getting more completions and not just on packages that are indefinitely typed. So right now, within VS, we have 3 JavaScript engines. We're working on kind of putting them all into a single spot now, and kind of so we stop duplicating effort. And so we might kind of end up, it looks like we're going to end up with a mix of definitely typed and maybe some static analysis. So hopefully this will come together into a more cohesive experience going forward. If you want to learn more about some of the features, then each of them have websites, right? So I kind of use both of them side by side, right? If I want to spin up something really quickly, then VS Code is great. I use it on all of my VMs. If I'm on my dev box where I have all my power, then I want VS for that. So it's a matter of preference there. So aka.ms/explore-ntvs. And then, actually, I already had the URLs there. Cool. And then there are also some resources. So there's today's demo. I have both the code and the deployment up here. For you to go around, play with, make bobbleheads of all your friends. The next thing is, actually, I didn't flip the switch on this yet, but I will right now. Hold on. Kind of created this little repo for some of the node, just general tips. A lot of it is pulled from this talk. Just kind of tips on getting started. Here are some different CLI tools and stuff like that. Don't go to it yet. It's private. I'm about to flip the switch on it. Compiling native add-ons has all the links over here for you to install. The table that I included as well. And then a bunch of links to different teams who are actually doing things to help. And so this is kind of an experiment right now. And so if you want to contribute or you see things missing, then absolutely, we would really appreciate it. So I'm going to go into settings, and I'm going to just make it public. And yeah, Node.js guidelines. Sweet. All right, so now, so anyone want to hit the site and see if it actually, well, actually it can go into, all right. That's it. So go there, check it out. Let us know if you have any feedback, file an issue with questions. It's pretty dynamic at the moment. It's not complete. But it's something that we hope would help with some of your development. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay. How's it going, everyone? Oh, am I good now? It's good? Cool. Hey, so a little bit of a change in the schedule. I am listed to be talking to you about scoped packages, which I'll get to, but I'm going to talk about a couple of other things first. And then additionally, one of my really excellent coworkers, Ben, who works on our on-site product, is unfortunately not going to be able to be here tonight. He had a really special demo for you showing NPM on-site working exclusively on Azure. And so in about 15 minutes over Slack, he talked me into how to do that. So we're going to try and do that at the end of this talk. So we'll see how that goes. But if anything, wait through for that, because I've got a demo. So what I want to talk to you guys about today is this package manager that you all know and love. How many people here use NPM every day? Oh, okay. Well, hopefully we'll maybe get a couple more of you doing that, because a lot of people use NPM every day, but they don't know the extent to which the NPM CLI affords you like a ton of different interesting things. There's a lot of kind of hidden gems in NPM, and what I'd like to do today is walk you through what I think are some of those. Now, some of you guys may have heard of these before. My goal is that there's at least one that you didn't know about. And if it happens that you knew all of them, that's cool. Come work for NPM. Just kidding. I don't think we're hiring anymore. But you could use this slide deck as a way to help share these things with your friends, because we'd really like to see more people using these features. And a lot of the data that we have suggests that they are not. So I put these slides up on the internet. They're also in a GitHub repository, so if you see typos, if you want to well actually me, the issues are open, so feel free to do that. I'll just close them. Just kidding, I take PRs. And anyway, so these are here, and I'll show you them at the end of the talk. So my name is AG Dubs. I am on Twitter. I don't recommend you follow me. Instead, there's a new Twitter handle for NPM. It's called NPM Wisdom, because it turns out the collective noun for a wombat is a wisdom. Okay, that's a cool fact. So if you didn't know that, you learned something today. And so NPM Wisdom is going to be the voice of the community for NPM. We're looking to promote and try and like engage the community, get the stuff that you guys are writing out there. So definitely follow that Twitter handle. By the way, there's going to be a lot of emojis. So if you're not into that, just move on out. Okay, so I just started working at NPM. This is my third week, and I'm already promoting their stuff. I am called a developer community and content manager. Right? What the heck does that mean? It's super long title. It kind of barely fits on business cards. But this is how I think about it. If you don't understand how NPM works, that's my problem. All right, so what I tend to do, I run the documentation site. So if you don't like the docs, yeah, me too. We're working on that. And then additionally, I do a lot of tutorials and I do talks like this to try and educate people about NPM. All right, so as I was saying before, a lot of people use NPM, and this is the stuff that everyone knows. We know NPM install. But I want to tell you today about the stuff that not everybody knows. So let's get started. So one of the first things that I like to point out is that when we're using NPM, we often want to use something called a package.json, and this lets us manage our dependencies and mention their semantic versioning. But a lot of people write that manually, and that's a big pain in the butt. We have an amazing command line tool called NPM init, and it's super smart. All right, at the beginning of your project, in the root directory of your repository, you can put in this command. It'll know your dependencies. So if that directory already had a node modules folder, it'll read them in and put that in your package.json for you. All right. It also knows your repository, where that address is from the Git repo, that .git file in your directory in your repository. And then additionally, you can always run npm init. because it'll always add keys and never delete them. So say you run npm init, but you hadn't git init yet. You could git init and then npm init, and it's just totally fine. You're not going to end up deleting anything. And so this is super cool, but you know, npm init starts this kind of long command line, like question and answer thing, and that's like not really my jam. It takes too long. But there's this excellent thing where you can pass it dash dash yes. And what dash dash yes does is it says yes to all the questions. So all those amazing defaults, it just goes, cool. Yeah. Right? The only question it asks you is the author's name. And so I do this all the time. Ever since I discovered this, I've been using it constantly, and it's super excellent. Additionally, this one's maybe a little bit more common, but we see so many people not using it. First off, if you didn't know, npm install is aliased with I, so you don't have to type that all the time. You don't have to do, int sol, yeah, npm install, that never works, but I is easy. And then you can do dash dash save, and that's gonna take whatever you install and put it directly into the dependencies object in your package.json. And then additionally, if it's a dev dependency, you can pass it dash dash save dash dev. And I put this excellent emoji here in case you forgot what saving means and where you save things on these floppy disks. Excellent. All right, so we often get this question a lot, is like running npm, it's like very long. Is there a cache, right? And so it turns out that there is. Modules are stored in your home directory in a .npm directory. And so that's kind of cool because if you run it and you don't have connectivity, you'd think that you'd be able to use this cache. But it turns out you can't use this offline because it's still going to hit the network trying to see if it can find a newer version. However, there's a little bit of a hack that we can do, just like this. So we can pass the cache min flag and give it this huge number here. And then it turns out that that is going to let you install things from that global cache. So if you're, you know, on the Amtrak and it's a terrible internet connection and you really want to be coding, you know, got to hit the keys, you can use this. And this works great. And we should probably just alias this to npm install dash dash offline. But we haven't done that yet. So if you try it, it's not going to work. But the first one definitely will. I will leave that for the exploration of the user. Okay, so this is a fun one. How many people here ever programmed in maybe something like Ruby? Anyone? All right, so have you used Bundler? Maybe? So Bundler has something called a .lock file, which basically means that it keeps track of what you are using locally on your machine. When we declare our dependencies in the package.json, all right, we're giving it some sort of semantic versioning expression, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a specific one. So sometimes when we deploy, if we're deploying with dependencies where the authors are not, you know, using semantic versioning, sometimes things will go up in flames. And that's really terrible. And so what you really want at the end of the day is the ability to have exactly what's going on your local machine up on your server. All right? And so the way you can do that is using this lovely thing called npm shrink wrap. And what I will say is this feature is undergoing a lot of churn right now. All right? It's kind of difficult. And so sometimes you might feel like this using npm shrink wrap, but most of the time it's really awesome. All right, and so what npm shrink wrap lets you do is lock down your dependencies. You're going to deploy to production exactly what you used in dev. All right, and it's important to note that this locks every version of every package in node modules. That's all the way down the trees. All right, so you're going to get exactly the same thing. A word to the wise using shrink wrap, use it at the end. Don't npm shrink wrap at the beginning of your process. You're going to have kind of a terrible time. But right before deployment, this is a great thing to use. Now, a lot of people ask, why is this not a default feature? You're a package manager, your dependency management, obviously being able to lock this stuff down is important. And this really has to do with the values of npm. All right, we believe in Semver. Like, we want to make this happen. All right, and if you believe in semantic versioning, then and your semantic versioning is working and the authors are like using it, then you shouldn't ever really have any problems. You shouldn't need shrink wrap. All right, so Additionally, here's something that a lot of people don't know about, which is that we do love SimVert so much and we make it easy for you. So we have this command called npm version. What you're able to do is you pass it a type. And the types are major, minor, and patch. Now, I may be preaching the choir, I might not, but I've seen a lot of mistakes in the field, so I'm just gonna reiterate that a major version changes should be for breaking API changes. All right, this is when you break stuff. Minor is when you're adding a feature. And then interestingly enough, patch gets a little bit complicated, and I'm gonna go out on a limb here. Patch is for bug fixes, but it's also for docs. Docs are a first-class feature, and you should be doing it in your SemVer. So for all of you who are a little upset that you have to bump your patch version when you are releasing a new README, come talk to me. I'll talk to you about first-class docs and why they are important. Okay, so the next thing I want to talk to you about is run scripts. How many people here use Gulp, Grunt, or Broccoli? How many people think I just said a bunch of weird words? Yeah, I know. They're both true. Anyways, so those are all tools in the JavaScript landscape that allow you to automate tasks or build things. Now, npm, which is going to be already installed because you have Node, comes with that out of the box. And so what's really awesome is that you're able to use these here, and the way your package.json documents your dependencies, your package.json can also document the functionality that comes with like kind of the dev environment of your project. And so npm run scripts, you have two that are kind of a little different, which is test and start. And then for all the rest, you're going to be saying npm run, and then anything you declare in your package.json. A lot of people think that having to type run is a pain, but think about how polluted the namespace would be if we didn't have that there. Just think about that. Have a little empathy for that. But this is really amazing, and it allows you to automate all sorts of things. Now what... some of the really cool things that come out of the box with the npm run scripts as well is that we have these lifecycle events. Now, this can get really kind of a little bit more complicated, and I'm just going to briefly kind of throw these up here. These are some of the events that can happen. These are some of the ways you can modify those events to talk about how them happening before or after. But this is definitely something you should check out. These are ways it's like, don't publish something when the tests break. Right? Automate that. You don't want to be checking that on your own. But my favorite thing about the run scripts is that they're composable. All right? So what you're able to do is you're able to declare smaller scripts and then call them all together in another one. So this is like a classic one that I do a lot and just kind of like a best practices thing. As a way of organizing my npm scripts, I love writing what it is and then a colon and then the name. It's just kind of like a way. It's not an actual namespace, but it kind of gives the appearance of one. And so you can see here, I declare a dbmigrate script and a dbseed script, and then I make a dbreset, and I just concatenate those right there to run them together. And that's super neat. And I don't need to have any other tool from that. And you might notice, if you are a Grunt or Gulp user, that there's not a ton of parentheses here or curly brackets. It's a lot more declarative. You don't have a ton of punctuation going on. All right. So again, I was kind of here to talk to you about scope packages. And here we're going to do this now. So scope packages are really just a fancy way of saying namespace packages. So I had asked how many people here use npm. It didn't seem like too many. For the users of npm, how many of you are squatting npm package names? Anyone? So sometimes the way people collect domain names, sometimes people collect npm package names. And so scoped packages are going to allow you to have a whole set of names that you want, and they're going to be namespaced in by your username. So you can see here. The way you could do this is you can npm install, again, that's the alias. And then the way you do a scope is just with that at symbol, and then the scope, which is going to be your username, slash the name of the package. So it's very similar to the normal API that we have. Now, scope packages are private by default, but they don't have to be. And you know, you have to pay for private ones, so maybe you don't want to. And the way you can make them not like that is when you publish, you can just pass this access flag with equals public. Now you heard me talk about private modules, and so how many people here are able to work in open source all the time at their job? Hey friends, those are all the npm people. Yeah, so, oh, and Sarah, I'm sorry, you're blocked. I'm short, you're short, it happens. Okay, yeah, so we can't always do this. And so NPM gives you this amazing workflow, and it would be really terrible if you had to give that workflow up just because you weren't able to work always in the public at your job. And we understand that. And so we have this thing called NPM Private Modules. Now, the name is bad, right? Because in Node, everything's a module. And in NPM, we're calling them packages. Why do we call them private modules, not private packages? It's recursion. See, NPM Private Modules is also NPM. NPM, NPM. It's recursive. We're changing it. It's a bad name. Anyways. Yeah, so the way you would do private modules here is you're going to initiate a scope when you run your npm init, and you just pass it in there. And generally speaking, your scope's going to be a username. Now, the reason this is cool is, as I was saying, we love the npm workflow. We also love all of the people who wrote all those open source tools. But we have to write some proprietary code. So private modules are this awesome way that you can do your proprietary code alongside all the work that the open source community has also done. It's a way to combine them both, and that's like a really awesome, like, strong tool. Now, we realized when we did this private modules thing is that managing access is like really hard, like trying to like keep track of who has permissions to what. And so kind of in response, we came up with NPM organizations. And so NPM organizations, we use the NPM team command, are a way to create teams, and you can add members. And then you're able to kind of manage access to the package by granting and revoking access via scopes. And so when you're using private packages and you're working in a team, because you're probably working in a team if you need it to be private, this is like a really great way to be able to manage that. All right, so we're getting to the end. It was a real marathon. But finally, how many people work at a company where like you like basically like can't be making requests like outside the company, like on the internet? So we don't have, okay. So I've done some like consulting at places like at banks and stuff, just like not okay. And so you still want to be able to use these open source tools. The licenses allow you to do that, so how will you do it? And what you're able to do is you're able to run your own on-premises NPM registry. So I made a little office and a runner, because like run your own on-premises. Anyways, it was dumb. All right, so let's check out this demo. So here we are. We saw this page from Sarah's presentation. This is the NPM.js website, right? When you run the registry on your own machine or in your own company, you're going to get something that looks just like this. Right, and so we can see up here in the corner, it says NPM loves Windows Corp. And you have all of the packages that you would otherwise have in the registry. But in addition, you're going to see we have this Azure Demo Foo module. This is a very popular module. And so this is the demo module that you're able to do. And the way you're able to use this is like so. All right, so that is way too small for everyone, right? That's a little better. Let's clear this. Okay, so I'm in a demo repository right now. So the way I log in is I can use the login command just like this. I pass it the scope, which is Azure Demo, and I pass it this registry where it's hosted. I say this. It's going to ask me my username. Wow, not a lot of you are watching, or you don't like poop jokes. Okay, so I'm able to log in like this, and then I believe I'm able to say npm install at azure demo slash foo. Yep, and I'm able to install it just like that. So I'm able to connect to this local registry. This is all running on Microsoft Azure, and I have this site. This is the one? No, this is not. This is it. Yeah. I have this site where I can browse it just like I could browse as if I was using the public one. And then I also have complete access to all of these other private modules as well. So it's a really excellent way to organize those things. All right. So I hope that you learned at least one new trick. If you weren't an NPM user before, I hope I've somewhat enticed you with some of our features. And yeah, the more you know. If you want to know more about these, you look them up in the docs and there's an error, that repository is open, file issues, and I care about that and I will fix them. So I'm AG Dubs, these are the slides. Thank you very much.